Hi, it's Mark Bittman, and welcome to Food. As always, you can reach out to us at food@markbittman.com. Let us know what you think. We'd love to hear from you, and we will respond. Please subscribe to this podcast and leave comments wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps. Consider, please, also subscribing to our several times a week newsletter, ever-growing, ever more interesting, ever more fabulous, The Bittman Project, delivered straight to your inbox at bittmanproject.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Have you ever bought something, owned something that really inspired you to up your game? A tennis racket, a new pair of running shoes, a new piece of cooking equipment that made you just want to cook your brains out? I know that when I first started cooking on induction burners, I just couldn't stop. It was so much fun. When we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Some of the features that are available on this car include Dynamic Sky Panorama Glass Roof, Front Row Massaging Seats, you know you want that, available 33-inch all-terrain tires, which you will want when you check out the multi-terrain select. These are really great features, the kind of features that will make you proud and happy to own a Lexus GX. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer. Today's guest, Chris Morocco, is the very talented food director of Bon Appetit and also has a food podcast of his own called Dinner SOS, where he answers pressing and perhaps not so pressing cooking questions from his audience. We talked about that, much about some of the funnier questions he's gotten, but also about how Chris develops recipes, how he eats at home, what it is that he loves so much about the nature of a recipe, many things that he and I have in common. Chris is actually a colleague of my son-in-law, Nick, and it was nice to see how much the two of them like each other. It sort of made this conversation feel a little bit like family. You'll see. Kate and I really enjoyed talking with Chris. We agreed on a lot, and I think we all learned from each other, too. Finally, when Chris studied abroad in college, he brought just one book with him, How to Cook Everything. I never get tired of hearing stuff like that. Anyway, here we are. Enjoy. Chris, welcome to Food with Mark Pittman. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Kate's here too. Hi, Kate.
Hello.
You are the test kitchen director of Bon Appetit and an extremely prolific recipe developer. And as we know, I love talking about recipe development and recipe writing, and I know it fascinates a lot of people. So could you just run down your process, like how you get ideas and what happens after that?
Yeah. I mean, these days, frankly, I do a lot more managing than I do cooking. And yeah, it's funny to think of myself as a recipe developer, frankly, because I don't even get that many occasions to do it anymore, which is kind of sad in a way.
All right, we're going to throw you off the air now and talk to some of the people that work for you.
So you're going to want to get somebody else, somebody better, frankly. No, I think for me, you know, I'm always just thinking about recipes and the sort of the imperative that they need to be solving a problem. You know, like how can one make the audacious argument that in a world with literally billions of recipes, like as many like neurons as there are in brains or synapses or whatever it is that are inside our heads, you know, like how can you make the argument that we need one more? But there's always a way, you know, because you're trying to solve for a specific thing or specific problem, make something a little bit faster, incorporate a technique or an ingredient to something where it might not normally appear. And, you know, and I think that's like the bulk of the question I'm always asking, whether it's my development or my teams, you know, what problem is this solving? How are you going to frame this to our audience? And, you know, how are you going to explain like what the hook is here? And then there's the recipes that are kind of a bit of a thought exercise that just sort of leads you to an interesting place, right? Like, you know, okay, like ragu bolognese, you know, takes, you know, and it's more authentic forms like 3-4 whatever hours to simmer, you know, until like even ground meat has broken down to a state of tenderness that I think, you know, many people, you know, haven't quite experienced themselves if they haven't kind of taken, you know, the steps to create that level of execution. And, you know, what if we combined like ragu al bolognese with drunken noodles? Like, what if we were using, you know, a very different pantry to speed up the flavor development process, but in a dish that ultimately presents as something familiar, you know, to people, give them a way in, but engage their imagination. This is something that I live and breathe, and people are very curious about it, but I think nobody quite understands what recipe developers do. And
right,
we exist in the sort of like netherworld, at least like I do, you know, both doing my own development and, you know, overseeing the original development of the recipes we create at Bon Appetit, but also all of the recipes that we work on that come from chefs, you know, outside contributors and recipe developers. You know, how do you take content and recipe content at that from other people and turn it into actionable recipes for home cooks, right? It's like people don't quite understand that ultimately what I'm trying to create is a blueprint so that you can cook this thing at home. It's not about how well I can cook it and execute it. You know, it's about like putting a tool in somebody's hands so that they can create the same thing, you know, at least like 85 to 90% as well, hopefully.
It's an instruction manual. And I always say that. And as such, it has to work. Like it has to be better than the IKEA directions.
It does. And listen, you know, I was going to find like a more low key way to kind of slip this in, but Nick kept this little connection very quiet. Yeah. I just want to state on the record.
Wait, which connection? His marriage to Kate?
The connection to you. The fact that like I have like 1 degree of separation from you, Mark. Like this is like this is staggering to me. Cause, you know, 20 some odd years ago, I studied abroad in Paris for a year and I brought one book. I had like one very heavy suitcase made heavier still by my copy of How to Cook Everything.
Oh.
Seriously, you know, I let me temper that by saying like, I cannot remember exactly what I cooked from it that year. I just know that I had it on hand because to your point about how much language is enough language to sort of explain to people how to whip egg whites or do any number of other tasks. You know, your kind of baseline simple approaches to all these different categories of dishes, but then all the variations, what you can do with it. I mean, literally just the other day on Dinner SOS, I was talking to my former colleague, Claire Saffitz, about this issue, you know, about what is a recipe and what is really just a template, you know, that a template can cross over cuisines, it can cross over cultures, you know, like things that you see together, like chicken and rice, right? Like noodles and sauce, like these are templates, you know, and they exist like in all these different permutations. And, you know, empowering people to see the possibility of, you know, their own knowledge, their own pantries, and making smart substitutions, you know, employing ingredients in recipes that don't necessarily follow the context, right? That might be where that ingredient originally came from. You know, that's kind of what it's about for me.
In the days that I was really a recipe developer, when I really wrote recipes a lot, I didn't have the process that you have. I didn't really have colleagues, as many colleagues, and we certainly didn't talk about the difference between template and recipe, although I can understand that conversation.
Sure.
So it's a sort of curious, I mean, I too am sort of well past that, although I still really enjoy tackling a problem and solving it in the kitchen. So anyway, let's let Kate get a word in edgewise here.
I was just thinking about how much I liked the idea of template versus recipe, but also I wanted to say something about how it is to feel like there can't be any more room for any more recipes out there, because that could also apply to cookbooks, right? Like, how many more concepts are there that need to be written about in a cookbook? But then less so than when I first started out cooking, you come across a cookbook that you really love. Like the new Hattie McKinnon cookbook is just... I love it. Yeah, staggering. I love it so much.
It had me crying.
Yeah,
crying. It's. I mean, I cry about a lot of things, but I mean, that's one of them.
You and Nick both. I love it. I love a crier. But yeah, I just, the recipes are so wonderful. And I thought, oh, okay, well, I guess we do need this cookbook. I'll allow it. But there are times, and I'm not a recipe developer at all, but there are times where I see a recipe and the combination of ingredients is so perfect that I think, like, so perfectly suited to me that I just feel like, how did I not create this? How did I not think about this? So that's sort of what's fun about discovering a new recipe for me. Like, there's some date and baking combination that I saw recently, and there's, like, two of my favorite things, and just the way it was put together just spoke to me. So,
well, this is where I'm kind of coming to terms with what the world, like, actually is now, because I think there used to be a time where, okay, like, you know, whether it was the New York Times or Bon Appetit or whoever, just sending out recipes into the ether through a print product, right? Occasionally, maybe you heard back, you know, from like one or two readers via a handwritten kind of like scrawled note, you know, it's either something usually very positive or very negative, you know, but now it's, you know, we see these new social media platforms and other platforms emerge in which almost the sensation of, you know, all knowledge is like new knowledge. If it's like on TikTok for the first time, you know, like these trends kind of come back around, you know, and now that so much of our content is digital, as well as potentially some print or video or whatever, you know, ultimately everything is digital, and there are real practical considerations around, well, if you're a brand, you know, you can't just keep cannibalizing yourself, right? And keep developing the same types of recipes, or the recipes, let's just say, like Google determines to be the same. You know, ultimately, you kind of have to back your strongest players and continue to optimize them and continue to engage with your audience, you know, to promote them. But it's about what you're feeding, you know, where the opportunities are and where the blank space is to be creating new things and showcasing new ideas too, because that's obviously critical. Like, if you're a brand and you have a point of view, you know, that conversation has to continue.
Yeah, and every cook is on a different level. I mean, some people have never cooked before and they want to, and some people just want some new crazy combination with tons of prep. I mean, it's just such a spectrum, so.
Yeah, and who you're... audiences on a given platform might determine obviously how you tailor that approach and how you reach that person and, you know, how you frame that recipe. Absolutely.
And when they meet you, mm-hmm. you know, because you think, oh, I've done this 14 times already. I mean, or, you know, I did this in the 80s, I did this in the 90s, I updated it 20 years ago, I did it again in a different form, blah, blah, blah. Doesn't mean anyone who's coming to you now has seen any of that stuff.
And frankly, the people who were around in the 70s and 80s and everything, I mean, I went over to my aunt and uncle's house, you know, a couple months ago, and she's like, really? You put some of the pasta cooking liquid in the skillet? And it was sort of like, what's happening, Judy? You know, like, it's just like, oh, like, you think you're reaching people. You think some amount of your audience, at least, is, like, coming along for the ride with you, you know, kind of, you know, this aggregate knowledge, you know, that's being kind of passed on. But yeah, sometimes those, like, those victories are being won, you know, one person, one little, you know, kind of tidbit at a time.
So I was going to ask you what some of your favorite recipes that you've developed are, but I think a more interesting question would be, how do you cook on a regular basis?
Because
you have two little kids.
Yeah, okay. No, let's stick with, like, my favorite recipes, because do what I say, not what I do. I try not to bang on about this too much because I sound like just like a jaded, grumpy dad, you know, but the way I have to cook at home, like who I need to be in my own kitchen is like not like hugely inspiring.
Same.
You know, I really am quite curtailed in what I can do at home. And, you know, I mean, I'm a career changer, right, too. Like I didn't really start cooking professionally until I was, you know, right around 30. And, you know, I think I was aware that, of course, like in making what you love your career, you're going to entail some sacrifices, right? It's going to become your job and you're just going to have to sort of show up and do it. And I'm so psyched for that still every day, like in the workspace. But when it comes to like what I come home and cook at night, it's like, it's ugly, you know, it's like it's ugly 6 p.m. scrambling, you know, just like trying to make even a little bit of magic happen. But my kids, like, you know, at least like they do appreciate, you know, some of like my favorite recipes I've done, like, you know, like the BA's best chocolate chip cookies, like, you know, it's funny because like, it's one of those things like Carla Lolly Music assigned it to me, you know, maybe I didn't look like I had enough to do that day. And she was like, well, why don't you tackle this one? We could use an updated cookie recipe.
Right.
But I love like the deep dive, you know, it's somewhat rare that I get to just do a deep dive into something that is so iconic, so classic, you know, and just the ability to just like kind of pick it apart, you know, look at what are the recipes that are out there that, you know, audiences broadly speaking are gravitating towards. What are the iconic chocolate chip cookies that, you know, you just want to be informed by just to kind of know how other people have approached it.
You talked a little bit about reviews and comments, and I also date to the time when I'd get one letter a week or two letters a week from somebody who just thought I was the greatest person in the world or the worst. When digital comments started happening, I paid attention to them, but now I kind of generally ignore them. Unless, you know, if someone says this person's making a good point, you got to pay attention to that. I'm wondering how you must just get tons there. I'm wondering how you sort of generally handle reviews and whether you retest recipes and say, maybe we got this wrong, or you just always like they made a mistake because they always do, or what?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, like there's the type of review that's, you know, well, I changed. Well, no, it actually starts out clearly this recipe was never tested. Just like period, full stop. Everybody knows it. You know, I'm calling bullshit. Clearly this recipe was never tested because ... But then you kind of read a few lines down. It's like, well, I didn't have any blank, so I used this. You know, I didn't have that, so I used this.
There's always,
you know,
that.
So there's that kind of review, which, like, you know, it's fine. You know, we all kind of know what happened there. But we are trying to be more aware of reviews. And I can't remember what podcast she was on, but Genevieve Cove talked about this, like, in a way that I thought was, like, really relevant to me. You know, again, like, now that so, like, all of our content is digital, we can't ignore that feedback. You know, I think there was a time when we didn't have to be, you know, as aware of it. But now, you know, our recipes like have to work really hard for us, and you know, they're behind a paywall now. So there's a new kind of community of recipe users who are like, you know, are kind of like our most loyal and engaged subscriber audience through our app. And, we need to care, you know? But I would say, like, it's requiring a little bit of like a paradigm shift, you know, at least like for me, you know, as a leader, to think about how we work with existing content. And Genevieve's point was, you know, you're always editing. You always have to be editing. And for us as a big brand, that's definitely the case, you know, to continue to kind of interrogate the content that we've published and figure out how to continue to optimize it, continue to figure out how it can be working harder for us, as opposed to just being, you know, a brand that's consumed by creating new content, you know? And I think for a long time, we were definitely a little bit on the side of like, we're just so wrapped up, you know, producing new things that we're not necessarily spending as much time as we could be editing what's already there.
That's really interesting. Stay tuned for more from me, Kate, and Chris Morocco.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Have you ever bought something, owned something that really inspired you to up your game? A tennis racket, a new pair of running shoes, a new piece of cooking equipment that made you just want to cook your brains out? I know that when I first started cooking on induction burners, I just couldn't stop. It was so much fun. When we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Some of the features that are available on this car include Dynamic Sky Panorama Glass Roof, Front Row Massaging Seats, you know you want that, available 33-inch all-terrain tires, which you will want when you check out the Multi-Terrain Select. These are really great features, the kind of features that will make you proud and happy to own a Lexus GX. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer. Hi, folks. We have a new sponsor and an interesting one. We all take about 20,000 breaths a day, and Americans spend about 90% of our time indoors. That indoor air that we breathe can be up to 100 times more polluted than outdoor air, according to the EPA. And indoor air pollutants can cause respiratory symptoms like sneezing, congestion, scratchy throat, and even more serious health problems like lung and heart disease. So, what's the solution? Introducing Air Doctor, the air purifier that filters out 99.99% of dangerous contaminants so your lungs don't have to. This includes allergens, pollen, pet dander, dust mites, mold spores, and even bacteria and viruses. Air Doctor comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so if you don't love it, just send it back for a refund. Head to airdoctorpro.com and use promo code BITMAN, B-I-T-T-M-A-N, and you'll receive up to $300 off air purifiers. Exclusive to our listeners, you will also receive a free 3-year warranty on any unit, which is an additional $84 value. Lock in this special offer by going to airdoctorpro.com. That's airdoctorpro.com and use the promo code BITMAN. We do see that there's a very loyal following for process, for what a recipe is about, for how you got to that place, the sort of old Cook's Illustrated, if you will, model. Yeah. If I tried this, then I tried that. I fucked it up this way, and then I fucked it up that way, whatever. Why a recipe works, which we don't do a lot of, but people do. We think, I mean, we think there are, and I don't know that they're all necessarily old people, but maybe they are. But we think there are people who still like what this recipe is about, why it works, how we got to this place, and so on. And that doesn't have to be a long, drawn-out Cook's Illustrated kind of thing. You know, I tried this 125 different ways, and here are the first 124, and here's the best. It doesn't have to be like that, but it can be, I was playing around with this, and I discovered that, and then I thought about this. And people like that kind of story behind the thing. I get that there's video everywhere, and video is sort of taking over, but I personally feel like video is an inefficient way to learn things, and I can't be the only person who thinks that. So, you know, it's a big country. There's room for a lot of different ways of doing things, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right that I think the interest is there. I think just how you're able to reach your audiences is what has changed, you know? And for better or for worse, like video is one of those things that, you know, we do find like it's a different type of audience. You know, maybe it's like it's not the Cook's Illustrated type of audience, but it is a very engaged audience. And I've actually found, like, honestly, the YouTube audience, they were very hard on me in the beginning. But now it's like it's a place with like a fair amount of positivity because it's people who have created these like pockets of fandom around like really specific areas of content. See, Mark, like you're like OG, like
I'm
you're
totally kind OG. Of
like you didn't need to use social media to kind of like, you know, growth hack your way to a big audience. You know what I mean? Like you did it. Sorry, I'm going to say like the old fashioned way, but like, I mean that like, honestly, from a place of like profound respect, like books and reaching people through, you know, media, right? Like not through social media. And I am still like in awe of, you know, the people who, you know, like yourself, like are still around, you know, doing this work. But what I found like coming into, you know, the magazine space was that the people who were kind of in charge, like when I first, you know, kind of got in the door, a lot of them like never figured out any amount of social media or video, you know? And I feel like that ended up being a major detriment, you know, to their careers, that they weren't willing to kind of like engage. I was like right on the cusp, like this is really my point, that like I was right on the cusp of, you know what, I don't need to like really make a big play for increasing, you know, my following on Instagram or anything. But I was like, I just am worried about, you know, feeling personally like I'm a bit of a dinosaur, you know, like too early, you know, in mm-hmm. my career. And now I'm like kind of back around to that question of, well, yeah, but I really don't want to do TikTok, you right. know what I mean? And like,
yeah.
And that's probably going to act to my detriment, right?
Yeah, I mean, book publishers at this point are only bringing on authors who have certain numbers on their socials. Like,
oh yeah,
that's so obscene to me. But then I just think, oh, okay, well, I'm old, so I don't understand it. And they're allowed to do that. But it seems so unfair.
You know, it's like, I have to take heart, though, that, like, people like Hedy are publishing books like Tenderheart, right? That, like, she doesn't have some massive social media presence, but she is a recipe developer's recipe developer. I mean, she is so I would say, like, you know, beloved and respected within this industry in a way that, like, you know, there's a sort of like a mutual support within the community that I think hopefully is giving, you know, a platform for people who don't necessarily, you know, have just like raw social numbers behind them.
Yeah.
Less and less that support is coming from traditional, from OG publishers, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Fair.
We should talk about your podcast, Chris.
Oh, yes, because, sure.
So it's called Dinner SOS, and you basically solve audience problems. But you do it, I mean, Mark originally wanted to have a podcast that was based on car talk, but for cooking.
Oh, yeah.
Where people would like,
totally. Call,
yeah. I mean, I grew up.
I'm a Boston kid.
That's like
kid.
The background of my
Are you kidding?
Childhood. Yeah.
Everybody.
We actually
to
got
it.
A grant from NPR probably in 98, 99. We got a grant from NPR to develop that show.
Wow.
And me and Emily Nunn, I don't know if you know Emily, did a
no.
couple of pilots of, I can't remember what we were calling it, food talk or something incredibly uncreative. And it was good, but they decided not to make the show. So that was that. Then we wanted to do a podcast, and that was before we realized we could do a podcast without getting anybody to help us do a podcast. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the show we made. You know, it's like it is car talk for dinner, really. And I what I loved about the idea was, frankly, like we finally had the production support to do it right, to queue up live calls, you know, with listener questions and to follow up with them, find out how it went, that additional layer of insight. It's incredibly gratifying to me, you know, just to connect with people just where they are with their culinary knowledge and the problems that they're facing. I just like talking to people like you, you know, about food and just understanding like who they are in the kitchen.
Okay, but what's the craziest question you've gotten?
Let's get down to it.
I really had to think about this. There was somebody who was like going on a fishing trip and was looking for ideas of like what to make with freshwater fish, but with the caveat that they really didn't like fish at all. And it just sort of sent me into a tailspin of like, maybe you should be doing something different. Like maybe go bow hunting. Like, I don't know. Like, are we choosing these pursuits based on like, you know, that sort of level of, you know, kind of, whatever, like, are we choosing our pursuits like based on like, you know, somebody like that? Like what does it matter? You know, that he's like fishing, but like, doesn't like fish. I don't know. I sort of spun out about that.
That question is so funny because when I think of people freshwater fishing, I always think of bacon. And I think the answer to that question is make sure you have a lot of bacon because then you can make your fish taste like bacon and you'll be really happy. So anyway, well, no, there
I,
you
I
go.
I didn't want to be disheartening, but it's like there's a reason that like almost all freshwater fish, other than trout, but even sometimes trout, it's like it's smoked, you know? It's like something drastic has been done with it because most of it, like especially like what, like a largemouth bass that tastes like pond scum and algae, like
yeah,
no,
like
there's nothing to be done here. Sorry.
Leave it alone.
Just pick up some salmon on the way home. Anyway, not helpful, but that's what I was thinking. It's all a little bit like kooky. You know, what I thought we were going to be getting was like everybody's kind of like ugly failures. And we get that occasionally, you know, somebody who's just like, you know, sort of questioning how could I be cooking scallops better? Like, why are my scallops not like burnished and golden and brown and, you know, with that like kind of crispy edge? You know, but I think a lot of the time, like people don't necessarily realize there's kind of a gulf between like what they're doing and like what they could be doing. You know what I mean? Like, do people even realize that, like, you know, anyway, this is like very cynical, but like a lot of our failures in the kitchen are the sort of like the sort of quiet ones, right? Where we could be doing something better, but like, you know, are we truly going to embark on this intentional process of like becoming the best cooker of scallops possible?
I think that so much of people's cooking problems, so many of their failures are basically they're being overambitious either in their judgment of their own abilities, which maybe that's not even that big a thing, but so many recipes are really written or most easily accomplished when they're one or two servings. And I was in a cooking class the other day. I was just on a ship, and they had this beautiful culinary center with like 12 or 18 individual spaces, each with its own induction burner and cutting board. That's really beautiful. On the Regent Explorer. It was amazing. And the teacher, who was not me, the teacher was having people sear one scallop. Each person was searing one scallop. And I was like, that's really cool because it's – and some of them were like didn't know how to melt butter. So it was a wasn't a crazy lesson. But I thought, yeah, searing one scallop or even searing two scallops, that's pretty easy. You want to try to sear eight scallops? The fact is you kind of need two pans if you want to sear eight scallops. And that's not a lot of scallops. But the second you crowd a pan with scallops, I mean, getting a little – into the weeds here, but as soon as you crowd a pan with scallops or meat or chicken or anything that you want to brown, it just isn't going to work. You know, I think a lot of mistakes are about that sort of not getting the fundamental principle of the thing.
You know, yeah, no, I've never really thought about it quite like that because I feel like we're so often trying to control for, well, it's got to yield, you know, four servings, right? Like it's so invariable, you know, that we're just like, yeah, you know, we're kind of beholden to a certain yield outcome. But it's really true. Like we had a call from somebody who was saying like, you know, anytime they make pasta for a crowd, you know, like every time, you know, you're trying to knock around a pound of spaghetti, you know, that's not how people do pasta in restaurants, right? I mean, it's like you see like a very, you know, 3-4 ounces of some type of pasta, you know, in a 10-inch skillet minimum, being tossed around so aggressively, you know, with butter and maybe cheese or oil and pasta cooking liquid to bring it together the way it needs to have that lovely, glossy, emulsified, you know, kind of finish to it. And yeah, it's like if you have a pound of spaghetti, I mean, you know, it's like there's just no elegant way to do that, you know?
We wanted to ask you or give you an opportunity to shout out a few of your favorite summer recipes since it's summer and people are always looking.
Okay, here are my four. I'm going to move through these very quickly, all right? I love grilling cuts of meat that are like usually seen as like a braising cut. And like one of my favorite meats to grill is brisket. Very thinly sliced and aggressively marinated. So like this is called a grilled brisket with scallion peanut salsa. It gets a marinade of like oyster sauce, lime juice, soy sauce, sugar, etc. It can go for up to overnight and it's like thin pieces of brisket. And, you know, you basically then just like you grill them and they have like, obviously they retain some texture and chew, but just that kind of like the intensity of flavor you get from that is just so nice. And just like sounds a really great, easy, you know, kind of sauce to go on it. Summer squash and basil pasta. This basically, you know, you cook down zucchini or yellow, you know, crookneck or other squash to like a, like just like a gunge, you know, like you hammer it, you cook out all of the available moisture from it, you know, with garlic, basil, chilies, etc. And you just hammer it until it's like almost a paste. And then you kind of pick that up with some pasta cooking liquid and, you know, any kind of pasta of your choice. And just that expression of like summer squash, like when you've concentrated its flavor and you have that, you know, kind of melding of these ingredients, it just becomes quite rich and satisfying, you know, not quite meaty, but it's squash like you kind of never knew it. I just love that one. And one day, hopefully my children will eat it. That has not happened
they
yet.
They will.
I'm staying hopeful. And then this was like a random one, but I just was like, oh yeah, that was a good one. It's like a corn and chickpea bowl with miso jalapeno tahini dressing. Basically just like a lot of my fastest meals that I do, you know, at home, especially if it's just like for me and my wife is, you know, starts with like a base of crispy chickpeas, you know, but just cutting some, you know, some kernels off of a couple ears of corn, tossing them around like once those chickpeas have gotten a head start on crispiness, and then just kind of like integrated with like some leafy greens, and then just like a very flavorful blender dressing, you know, kind of featuring tahini with some miso and like some fresh chili. I just like, I'm a big fan of, if I'm going to break out the blender, I'm going to make it count, and I'm going to make like a really, you know, kind of luscious creamy dressing that's going to last for days. So I'll often use like a, you know, neutral vinegar, like a rice vinegar for it, just so, you know, there's like no sort of fall off in flavor from like fresh citrus or something. And that's just a great one just to use again, like kind of as a framework for how to turn a can of chickpeas and a dream into dinner. Soy basted chicken skewers with sesame citrus sprinkle. This one, basically my POV on skewers is stop trying to put a whole bunch of different stuff on a single skewer. You know, if you're going to do skewers, just have it be all chicken. If you want to skewer scallions or bell pepper or whatever else, like just do all bell pepper or scallion or chunks of onion on any one skewer. So you can really control for the cooking process of that one ingredient. And it's just like a simple soy, you know, lightly sweet marinade, you know, kind of in the vein of like yakitori, and then just like a fresh kind of citrus and sesame sprinkle just to kind of finish it. But I felt like when we did this story, it was like a print story from a number of years back, sort of was really like fun to just explore, you know, all the different things that like really like they cook in a very singular way, you know, when they're skewered and grilled over live fire. And chicken thigh is just one of those things that I think is a total knockout. So that is one that the kids will eat now. Major life update. And
major win.
I mean, obviously no sprinkle on it. I mean, my gosh. but just marinated and grilled, you know, skewered meats like I love doing now.
Okay, Kate, last question.
What did you have for dinner last night?
Oh, all right. This is going to make me sound like, well,
a dad.
In my mind. No. Actually, I was going to say, like, this is going to make me sound like a rock star, which
a recipe, you know, developer.
Not. No, I was in New York last night, and I stayed for dinner because I had a friend in town on a layover, and I took the afternoon off, and we went for an early dinner at Attaboy, you know, sort of in the Flatiron District. And the chef Jungin Park is just phenomenal. And this is a place that I'd eaten at pre-pandemic. I want to say it was like 4 or so years ago. And wow, to walk back in a place, you know, 4 years later, and it hasn't missed a step. And this is not how I eat, you know, most nights, truly. You know, I'll often like maybe have like one night out a week that I go out, or sometimes when I'm in New York, I'll meet up with friends and colleagues and get to try new restaurants. But I mean, they do, you know, like an egg custard topped with sea urchin and all, you know, kind of crispy bits of geem or, you know, kind of seasoned nori. They did, they do a Korean style twice fried chicken. They do, it's like a boneless thigh bone, you know, it's like boned out, but then cut into like this little sort of like almost like a baton. And then it's given a supremely crispy batter. You know, it's got to be like potato starch or something, kind of, you know, sort of tempura like shell, but they twice fry it. So the level of crunch is just insane. And they do a gochujang dipping sauce with that and a spicy peanut dipping sauce. Both are so phenomenal. There's a whole number of things they do on their tasting menu. And they've always have this dessert that's like a shaved ice over burrata. And then they kind of vary up the set. And last night it was a peach yogurt with burrata and a very intensely aromatic cinnamon sort of infused shaved ice with walnuts. And it was just sort of like, you're kind of eating this. You're just like, what is this? You know, it like when cinnamon, it's not cinnamon in the way of like the way it can kind of dry out your palate, but cinnamon from the standpoint of like, almost like just like the oil, like the retronasal kind of experience of like the brightness, the liveliness of that flavor. And it was just mind-bending. So anyway, that was an uncharacteristic big night out for me. But normally I would have a much more humble answer for you.
We have all kinds of answers, so that's cool.
Yeah, I like that we got you on a rock star night.
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks, Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
No, thank you both. Seriously, it's just, it's fun to be here. It's really so cool to be able to connect with you. And I just, you know, frankly, I can't wait to have you on Dinner SOS so I can ask you questions. And yeah, I appreciate the chance to have the conversation.
Yeah, and that's happening soon, I think. So yeah, we'll see you again in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, that sounds great.
All right. Thanks again, Chris. Take care.
Yeah.
Kate, pleasure. Talk to you later. Bye.
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 I'm going to read you Chris's recipe for corn and chickpea bowl with miso jalapeno tahini. Gorgeous picture on the Bon Appetit website. And of course, you can find it there. Once again, it's the corn and chickpea bowl with miso jalapeno tahini. It's not that challenging. There are a few ingredients. So get ready. You will want, it's on our website too, so you don't really have to take notes. You just have to be inspired. You will want a 3/4 inch piece of ginger peeled and finely grated, 2 small jalapenos seeded and chopped, 2 garlic cloves finely grated, 1 cup of cilantro leaves with the tender stems, 1/3 cup of fresh lime juice, 1/3 cup of tahini, 1.5 tablespoons of miso, and some salt. You will also need 3 tablespoons of olive oil, plus some more for drizzling. It's not going to get used all at once. 2 more garlic cloves, lightly crushed. 1 14-ounce can of chickpeas rinsed and drained. Obviously, you can use chickpeas that you cooked yourself. 3 ears of corn shucked and the kernels stripped. 1 tablespoon of za'atar or another flavorful spice blend of your choice. More salt and 4 cups of little gem or other small lettuce leaves, torn if they're large. For garnish, crumbled feta, some lime wedges, and more cilantro. So to put it all together, from that first ingredient list, you puree the ginger, jalapenos, garlic, cilantro, lime juice, tahini, miso, 3 tablespoons of water, and some salt in a blender until smooth. That's pretty easy. You can do that a day ahead and keep it in the fridge in an airtight container. Now for assembling the bowl, heat 2 tablespoons of oil in a large skillet over medium. Add those crushed cloves of garlic and cook, turning occasionally until they're golden brown, 3 or 4 minutes. Mash that garlic with a spoon and stir it into the oil. Add the chickpeas and increase the heat to medium-high and cook undisturbed until the chickpeas are golden brown and beginning to crisp underneath about 3 minutes. Toss and continue to cook, tossing occasionally until they're golden brown all over another couple of minutes. Add the corn along with 1 tablespoon of oil and cook, tossing until the corn kernels are golden around the edges and tender, 5 to 7 minutes. Sprinkle the za'atar or whatever spice mix you're using over everything and toss to coat, season to taste with salt. Now, lightly drizzle that lettuce with oil in a large bowl and toss that to combine, season that with salt. Divide the tahini among 4 bowls and top it with a portion of lettuce and the corn and chickpea mixture. Sprinkle that with feta and serve with lime wedges and cilantro alongside. As I said, you will find this recipe on our website and on the Bon Appetit website. So, looks great, sounds great. I hope you enjoy it. Thank you to a wonderful, innovative, brilliant cook and all-around great guy, Chris Morocco, for joining us today. You can follow him on Instagram at Morocco Chris, MoroccoChris. And you can obviously get more of him and his creative, inspired recipes at bonappetit.com. Don't forget to listen to Dinner SOS, too. Thank you to my co-host, Kate Bittman. She is also our producer, and thanks to our engineer, Davis Lloyd. Thank you for listening again. Please subscribe, and please subscribe to our newsletter, too, The Bittman Project at bittmanproject.com. See you next week when we will have somebody amazing. Bye for now.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out at the French Open for a chance to win a Grand Slam title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. See the action unfold as legends fight for glory and new rivalries emerge. Daily live coverage begins Monday, May 20th, with match replays on demand so you never miss a moment. From the first serve to the final point, Roland Garros promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.